Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. And there is big news coming out of Washington today, as both the U.S. House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate have signed the tax bill. It is the largest tax reform measure that was passed by Congress in the last 30 years. You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. And as we speak, there is a gathering over there on at the White House with President Trump and members of Congress, as he will be signing the legislation and making a speech today about just how big this really is. We're going to be talking this hour about energy policy in the new administration. Those of you that are regular listeners to this program know that we've had a series of conversations, roundtables, discussing the war on coal. That was Mr. Obama's approach to the coal industry, as he saw fossil fuels as the, he demonized them during his administration. He attacked and really commenced a war on the coal industry in this country. And he pledged to shut down coal fire generating plants across the country. And he said, you might be able to mine coal, but you won't be able to sell it. I mean, never have we had a chief executive that took on an American industry that has been so vital to Ohio, to America's energy and to its productivity and its industry as Mr. Obama did. Well, obviously, with the election of Donald J. Trump, who basically said to coal miners that he would bring coal back. Well, we're going to talk about that today with Mr. Murray of Murray Energy. He's with us on the phone. Also, Jim Martin of the 60 Plus Association. He's with us on the phone. Jim actually was involved heavily with this tax reform measure, trying to end the federal estate tax, or what's known as the death tax. We did that here in Ohio a few years ago. It was in the budget in John Kasich's first administration. We pushed for the elimination of Ohio's death tax. And Jim Martin's been working on this for years on the federal level. He's going to give us an update of that, of what actually came out in the tax reform measure. But again, this is monumental news coming out of Washington, because it's going to mean jobs for the American worker across the country. It's going to mean lower tax rates for working families. It's going to be an engine to get the American economy going again. And with us on the phone is Bob Murray of Murray Energy. Mr. Murray, your thoughts on the tax reform measure that President Trump will be signing this afternoon?
Well, I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful for the working people of America. I have gotten to know President Trump personally. He deeply cares about the working people of this country. He deeply does. I think when he was building those apartments and offices in New York City, he really did get to know the plumbers and the bricklayers and the steeplejacks, because he does care about working people, and he certainly does care about my coal miners. After 8 years of the worst destruction of any person ever committed on this country in the form of Barack Obama, he has tried to rectify those sins, and they were sins, very evil. Most of what he did was illegal against our industry, so it's made it much easier for President Trump to correct them, live with the sword, die by the sword, and that's what our Mr. Obama's legacy has been. So I'm very pleased with what the president has attempted to accomplish for working people in this country, for people on fixed incomes. And I think the tax reform, we had a scare, because right to the end, the Senate version of the tax reform would have cost my company $60 million a year. The House version was okay. And we finally got in conference those corrections made. So the House took the lead here, more so than the Senate.
I'm so glad to hear that, Mr. Murray. Of course, there's so many details to this comprehensive tax reform plan as it was moving through. And there is a website that the U.S. House of Representatives has set up so that folks can see the details of what is in this tax reform measure. One thing I think the working man is really going to appreciate is that his tax rates have been reduced. And come February, they're going to see more money in their paycheck. In fact, one of the measures in which in the bill itself, Speaker Ryan was speaking on a radio program this afternoon right after he hit the gavel and the passage of the bill, the second vote of it, by the way, because there was some minor changes over in the Senate, had come back to the House, and then they finally voted and concurred. So it's on to the president's desk. But saying that the IRS is to be notified that the rates have been changed. So by February, the working man and woman should be able to see more money in their check because the tax rates have been changed. And so that's more take home pay. That's good news for John Doe and everyone that's out there. Jim, your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a step in the right direction. It's the first major tax reform in more than 30 years since Ronald Reagan. And let me point out all the negative comments by the liberal press, how that, majority of the public is against it. Well, they said the same thing about Ronald Reagan's tax reform. But once it was instituted, the numbers turned around and people were in favor of those tax cuts. Why? Because they put more money in their pockets, their own money, leaving money with the rightful heirs, the people who earned it. So we applaud them for doing what they've done. Again, as Mr. Murray said, there's lots of moving pieces, but it is a major step in the right direction. And going back to John Kennedy, remember he used to say, a rising tide lifts all boats. The Democrats were not saying back in those days, Mr. Kennedy, you're making a tax cut for the rich. You know, everybody's getting a tax cut here. Yes, even the wealthy. The same way they got tax cuts under President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. So it is a major move in the right direction. Paychecks will look a lot better come February. We like to applaud House Ways and Means Chairman Kevin Brady of Texas in the House, and of course Mitch McConnell and others on the Senate side for pushing through this legislation. It means so much to middle-income and lower-income folks, not just seniors, but taxpayers all over the country. They can rejoice in this piece of legislation.
Well, that's right. And last time in the early 80s when under Reagan there was tax reform, tax cuts. It was an economic engine for the economy, and it carried on for years to come. We anticipate that this would have the same example. In fact, the corporate rate, for instance, corporations have been strangled. They've been leaving this country trying to avoid the high tax rate of 35% when the average for other nations is 22%. Finally, with this bill, it cuts the corporate rate to 21%. Your thoughts on that, Mr. Murray?
Well, I was more concerned about the fact that the alternate minimum tax had to be eliminated. The House had it and had it in their bill from the beginning. We did get it in from the Senate bill. It's left it in and did not repeal it. And actually, the tax rates don't mean much when you're a capital-intensive, highly leveraged corporation, such as Murray Energy. You're in the AMT, and the rates don't mean that much. But in the end, we got rid of the alternate minimum tax, and so it's very helpful to highly leveraged, not just coal companies, but all highly leveraged capital-intensive businesses in America.
Well, that's good news. That has been discussed in Washington for some time, and they kept kicking the can down the road with the ATM. And so, again, another inhibitor to industry, to obviously free up the kind of capital. Cutting the corporate rate, of course, The intent there is to bring something like $2 trillion that's overseas back home, welcoming that investment back to America, to the 50 states, so that the economic engine and progress and development can get going. And it's a very exciting time, I think. I mean, a lot of people are very excited about this. It's a major win for President Trump. And let's keep the big mo going. That's what I'm thinking here. Jim, your thoughts?
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, some economists have estimated that $2 trillion is more like $4 trillion, which would be a huge boost to the economy. Yes, Big Mo, I like the way you put that. Let's keep it going. And Mr. Murray is right. The AMT tax had to be done away with. And going back to the estate tax or death tax that we've been promoting for over 20 years now, we get it through the House version, repealed it. On the Senate side, you can look at it two ways. I say that they doubled the exemption. It was going to be $5 million or roughly $11 million for a couple. Senator Orrin Hatch, head of the Senate Finance Committee, and others, they've doubled that exemption now to around $11 million or $22 million for a couple. That still leaves an awful lot of small businesses, farmers and ranchers, because of the cost of land, that still leaves them on the hook paying the estate tax. Yes, that's a step in the right direction. We say repeal it totally, but at least that's better than nothing. Look, when I started on this issue 20 years ago, it was only a $680,000 exemption. So getting up to $22 million, yes, that's a huge step in the right direction, but total repeal is the only way to go in the long run.
Well, again, Jim, thank you. And I know you worked with Grover Norquist and others on this to try to eliminate the estate or death tax.
Yes.
And you've been doing yeoman's work on this for a long time. You know, again, we didn't get the elimination or just the repeal, outright repeal of the death tax, but they did change it. They did double the exemptions. It will mean big dividends for family farms here in Ohio and a number of businesses. It's unfortunate that they weren't able to get it across the finish line and just do away with it. But again, thanks to you and your efforts, they raised the exemptions, doubled them actually, and that will mean a lot for farmers and small business going forward. Your thoughts,
yeah, well,
Mr. Murray?
You said too, Chris, like you said though, too, in Ohio, you got rid of yours, Kasich.
Yes.
Governor Pence, when he was governor, the vice president, he got rid of it in Indiana. LePage up in Maine, I flew up to Augusta, Maine last year, gave that governor an award because his state became the 31st state to get rid of their state inheritance tax. So a movement is afoot. 31 states now have gotten rid of theirs. Why? I'll never forget the quote by George Pataki years ago when he was governor. He said he was trying to eliminate the estate tax or inheritance tax in New York. He said, our seniors aren't moving to Florida and Arizona just for the sunshine. They're taking their wealth and they're going elsewhere, and you couldn't blame them for that.
Right.
So it's a movement. We've got it going. And I was with Grover today. Clearly, it's an issue whose time has come. It's not a revenue raiser like the Washington Post and others like to say. It's really a revenue loser in that jobs are not created when that wealth is held on to by the government. The government does not create jobs.
Well, and as we said from the scriptures, it says a good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children. So from our standpoint, from a biblical standpoint, it was not right for the state or the federal government to come in and to raid a man's estate after he had lived a lifetime paying taxes, working, and you know, obviously building up a savings and investments that he'd pass on to his posterity. This is actually a biblical model, and for the state to come in and raid that was actually, from our standpoint, something in which was actually immoral. So we have long since been against the death tax or estate tax because the state has no business going in and raiding a man's accounts once he's passed on. That is to go on to his posterity, to his children, and they'll invest it, and that money will be taxed again. But the state coming in and doing that again, we objected that over moral grounds, and so we're so glad for what you were able to accomplish, Jim, on the federal level again. again, not where you wanted to be with a total elimination, but certainly you took a big hit against the estate tax on the federal level. So congratulations to you and your efforts.
Thank you.
Mr. Murray, your thoughts on that? So, again, some of the other aspects of the tax reform legislation.
I've always thought that the death tax or inheritance tax was immoral. Actually, as you said very well, taking away from a man's life's work after he had or a woman, after they had already paid taxes their entire life. But there's one point that I want to make here. This was all done by Republicans. Mr. Trump, you're giving him credit, and he was the one behind the driver of this tax reform, Republican. I haven't seen the Senate vote, but I don't think there's a single Democrat in this country that supported these reductions in our people's taxes and on our industry so we can create better jobs and compete in the world marketplace. I don't think there was a single Democrat that supported this. Yet you don't see that in the normal media because it is biased. But think about it. It was done unilaterally, in a partisan way, by one party, the Republican Party.
Well, yeah, and that's really sad and tragic because this should be something that both sides of the aisle work on for the future of our country. For the benefit of its people, moving forward, cutting taxes, helping families, and they didn't participate. All they could do is sit on the sidelines. We're talking about the Democrats, the minority party, and basically just criticize all along the way, and all for political purposes. And that is really unconscionable, in my opinion, for those no one to break ranks and to say, look, there's some good things in this bill. I support that, you know, and I think this is going to help the people back in my state. That they are putting party over country, and that's just wrong. It's so wrong on so many levels. Our good friend, Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio 6th District, gentlemen, he was going to join us today. He was scheduled, but then he was called away as the second vote in the House was called for. And then he was called up to the White House to join the president for the signing of the bill today. But he did forward a statement. I won't read it all, but I'll read. He does talk about the getting rid of the alternative minimum tax, Mr. Murray, which you referenced, elimination of the Obama individual mandate, that tax. This is another death nail in Obamacare. So, again, we've talked about that as well and just how Obamacare has been a failure. So this is another death nail in Obamacare, taking away that tax penalty, which is really unconstitutional, that the federal government would penalize you and force you to pay for something. It goes beyond the libertarian rights of each individual in this country. Our founders would be rolling over in their grave when that Obamacare passed. But he also says important deductions for home mortgage interest, student loan interest, and charitable donations remain. Most importantly, the middle class, hardworking Americans that are too often left behind will see tremendous tax relief. This legislation delivers higher wages, lower taxes, bigger take-home paychecks, a simple and fair a stronger economy across the board. Working with President Trump, we're empowering individuals, families, and businesses to invest and succeed in the American dream. So it is appropriate to celebrate today the People's House. This is Congressman Bill Johnson's statement on today's tax reform passage legislation. I know he's worked on many of these issues, and so I'm sure that he is very much rejoicing in this, and on a future program, we'll have him with us. But again, this is just major news in Washington. It's going to be a great economic boost and, you know, moving the American economy forward. Mr. Murray, do you see this as overall good news for your industry and the coal industry, the energy industry?
Yes, I do. President Trump has already done some wonderful things for the coal industry. Actual employment in the mines is up about 5,000 to 6,000 people since he's been elected. Under Mr. Obama, 63,000 coal mining families lost their livelihood. 63,000. Every one of our coal miners accounts for 11 jobs in our communities. So those 63,000 coal mining jobs actually accounted for 1 million lost jobs in certain regions of the country. We only mine our coal in. And so the magnification and the focus of that 1 million jobs was just in certain regions of the country. It was devastating. He's brought back 5,000 to 6,000 actual jobs, but he saved 25,000 coal mining jobs by overturning the Clean Power Plan. We've calculated the number. It's actually 25,000 jobs. The industry would have gone. Under Mr. Obama, we accounted for 52% of the electricity. When he started his administration, we're down to 30%. We'd have gone down to 18% with a Clean Power Plan, no environmental benefit whatsoever, but would have closed 53,000 more megawatts of coal-fired generation, 56 more coal-fired plants on top of 411 plants that Mr. Obama destroyed. So Mr. Trump saw that, stopped that. So he's added some coal mining jobs, and he saved 25,000 already. That's a fact, and based on our calculations.
Well, that is good news, and I know that right out of the gate, he was writing executive orders. He was working to keep his pledge and promise to the American coal miner in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Kentucky, Ohio. He was committed to fulfilling that promise and that pledge. He's held firm on that. He's been true to his word. You know, Jim, you put out a press release this week and that the president has made good and kept his promises on deregulation and his agenda of saving billions of dollars. So your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, there's an old saying in this town, promises made, promises kept. Politicians who go out and campaign, they make all these promises. When they get elected, unfortunately, they sometimes fail to keep those promises. Well, guess what? This president is not only making those promises, he's keeping them, to the consternation of the liberal left. And going to the energy issue, let me just point out, last Sunday in the Washington Post, there was a big article about Rick Perry, another Department of Energy secretary, and about Bob Murray. Bob was mentioned throughout the article. Again, the liberals never let up. I got to be honest with you. I was appalled at that story. Even by Washington Post standards, it's one of the most biased stories I've ever read in 50 years of journalism. I do have a degree in journalism. It's a Bachelor of Science. And of all the firms that were quoted throughout that story, Bob, all the firms that were quoted were all coming from the left. They were all the enviros. They were all knocking the so-called Perry plan. And finally, no, I got to tell you, toward the end of the article, they did. The reporter Stephen Mufson made reference to the Chamber of Commerce and the Nuclear Energy Institute. He said both of these firms backed the Perry plan. Well, I was expecting then to hear from Tom Donahue at the Chamber of Commerce or somebody at the Nuclear Energy Institute. No, no reference to them. You know, you would have thought, and again, being a former journalist, to be fair, quote-unquote, to be fair, you usually have at least somebody from the other side. I kept waiting to hear maybe they're going to quote Myron Ebel from the Competitive Enterprise Institute or somebody from the Cooler Heads Coalition, of which 60-plus has been a member for 20 years. Not one word from the other side. That's how biased that particular story was.
Well, we're going to talk about that. Hang tight, gentlemen. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back on the other side. We're going to talk about the energy plan and the policy in Washington going forward. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
I'm Johnette Cruz, and I'm a busy mom. Then a friend told me about TrustBlueReview.com, a new website powered by the Christian Blue Network. She uses it to find trusted Christian-owned businesses. I checked it out, read the helpful reviews, and found a great family dentist. Now I use TrustBlueReview for all my family's needs. For peace of mind, do what I did. Visit TrustBlueReview.com or download their free mobile app from your app store today.
The trusted source for all you do, TrustBlueReview.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue Review.
And we're back, and with us on the phone is the chairman of Murray Energy, Mr. Bob Murray, and also the chairman of the 60 Plus Association, an advocacy group for seniors across the country, Mr. Jim Martin. Gentlemen, welcome to the back to the program.
Good to be with you.
Well, we talked the first part of this program about, of course, the big news coming out of Washington, and that is the passage of the tax reform legislation and what that's going to mean for families and businesses and corporations and really our country going forward. And it was a pledge by President Trump. Congress is finally getting their act together and getting some things done. They are on a momentum right now. Let's just keep Big Mo going. In fact, over on the Senate, they're approving a lot of federal judges, who have more of a constitutional view of the law, and this is going to bode well, I think, for conservative causes going forward. In fact, I was told today that this is the largest opening of federal benches or turnover currently since 1952, and the Trump administration is actually outpacing his predecessors of Obama, Clinton, Bush, and all the way back to Reagan. He has appointed or had confirmed something like 18 federal judges just in that first year. And so I'm told that they're heading towards 25. So good things are happening right now in Washington. Very quietly, President Trump is filling the courts with conservatives. And that's going to bode well, I think, for our country going forward. Mr. Murray, your thoughts along those lines?
The most important issue for President Trump right now is what you alerted to before, that the nation's energy policy and the actions of former governor and energy secretary Rick Perry, as directed by Mr. Trump, and what's called a notice of proposed rulemaking to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to address the reliability, resiliency, and the security of the electric power grid. People flip that switch and they get their electricity, and that's all they think about. What happened under Obama, he closed 411 coal-fired power plants, and what's happened is our power grid is very unreliable, and electricity prices have been driven up. Right now, that retired couple is paying out 21% of their earnings on their fixed income for energy, gasoline, and electricity. That should not be in America. And what Mr. Trump has recognized and addressed this. Jim and Chris, you can't store the sunshine at a power plant. You can't store the wind at a power plant. You can't even store natural gas. It comes in a pipe. Yet these loads on these power plants go up and down all day long and over the seasons. And there has to be something there to keep the lights on and keep people from freezing in the dark. as these loads go up and down daily and over the seasons. That is only nuclear power and coal-fired generation. Mr. Trump, Mr. Perry recognize this. Know that the grid is unreliable, and remember these grid operators that buy the power from the power companies, they're private businesses too, and they just buy the cheapest power called energy available. And if the sun's shining and the wind's blowing, they buy it or they'll buy gas. But what if it isn't? Then you have to have something reliable. But yet they have not been paying these coal-fired generators or nuclear generations for the capacity payments that they need to keep that capacity there. It's expensive, and they've been driven into bankruptcy. And we're closing more power plants all the time. It's not stopped yet. This has made a very unreliable electric power system in this country. This is the most important thing that I have seen in my 60 years in addressing reliable, affordable, low-cost, resilient, secure electric power in America. It is the strongest, most important action. It is driven by President Trump. It is driven by Secretary Perry. And we hope that the appointees on the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and the Democrats have already, the two that are there, have already showed their opposition to it. This has got to be enacted, because if we have another polar vortex like we had in 14 in the United States, electric utility here was ordered to be connected to 3,800 megawatts of windmills and solar panels. When they called on it, they only had 15 megawatts. So what kept the lights on? What kept our homes heated? It was 8,170 megawatts of coal-fired generation. Every megawatt of that generation has now been closed by the Democrats and Barack Obama. We have a huge problem that people don't realize, that when they flip that light switch, we're very close to not having electricity.
Well, that's right. And there was a study that was done about the polar vortex. There was actually two crises in the U.S. electric grid over the last 15 years. One was in 2003 when we had the blackout, and that was basically it stemmed from Ohio all the way to the East Coast to New York City. And it was a massive power outage, and it was a cascading effect. They were trying to figure out exactly what happened. In fact, it's classified as specifically what happened, because we don't want our enemies knowing the vulnerabilities of our electric grid. If we had Mr. Johnson, Congressman Johnson, on with us right now, he would be talking about how in Congress he is on several key committees to talk about the reliability and the safeguarding of America's grid system so that we don't have massive power outages. In 2003, and I remember it well, when the power went out, the lights went out. Now, they said that it stemmed back here in Ohio. They actually, First Energy was the company that has Ohio, Pennsylvania, all the way to New Jersey. But they were basically, they're a company that has made a lot of changes since then, and actually is probably more reliable now within their system than other power companies across the country. They could probably take some lessons from First Energy, because they learned from that. Of course, they got straddled with it. I think there was a cascading effect. There was a lot of things. Again, it's classified as to what happened there. You know, they say, well, it was tree limbs. That may have been one thing that just kind of triggered it, but what it did was it shown a vulnerability within the grid system. But that also was part of the... From what I'm reading, Mr. Murray, just a layman looking at this and researching this. And then, of course, the next one was in 2014, like you said, the polar vortex, when we had a deep plunge of frozen, frigid weather for weeks throughout the Midwest and the central part of the U.S. And then the demand for energy that just skyrocketed and lasted for weeks. It was a stress test on the grid. And at that time, there was a study that said we almost basically had another blackout, that it was just too much for the grid to handle. And then it comes the question, what do we need to prevent that again? So what they found out was a number of the resources. Obviously, you have wind and solar, you have gas, you have oil, you have coal, you have nuclear. These are the energy that feeds the grid. Now that we have these multiple energy sources feeding the grid, and then they did a comparison of how they all fared. And so the Perry plan, those of you that are just tuning in, you're saying, what were you talking about? Well, the Perry plan, through the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or just FERC, we'll refer to it as FERC, that plan by Secretary of Energy Rick Perry basically is saying that coal plants need to have a 60-day supply of coal on hand so that we don't get into a situation where they only have a few days supply of material to keep the economic engine of the power energy engine of the coal plants operating. So if there's a disruption in shipments of coal to the plants, we won't be in a bad way. And so it's actually a common sense approach to this. But Jim, you referred to the Washington Post story, which was basically just a hit piece. It was written on December 8th. Steve Mufson was the author, in American Energy Plan Straight from Coal Country. And it basically is a hack job on this Washington Post story. Your thoughts on that, Jim?
Well, it was clearly a hatchet job of the first degree. I have to admire the guy for having the chutzpah to not even quote somebody that might even slightly approve of the Perry plan. And by the way, the Perry plan is the Trump plan. And to go back to what Bob Murray said a minute ago about the electric grid, Secretary Perry gave 60 days for FERC to respond. They asked for a 30-day extension. He granted that. I think the deadline is now January the 10th. He's given them their request another 30 days. Some of them are brand new. They're just trying to get acquainted with their desk, I guess. These are a couple of new Republican appointees, and that's a good sign for the new Republican appointees. But even Secretary Perry says if the commission fails to adopt the proposal within the original deadline that he set, the security of our nation's electric grid will continue to be at risk. He went on to tell them, look, you don't have to wait until January the 10th to act. So he's pushing them hard to go ahead and act. And incidentally, the power plants, you know, whether it's coal, whether it's nuclear energy, all of the above. And by the way, Bob, you can't store sunshine. You can't store wind. I used that the other day on a talk show out in Seattle, Washington.
Well, they even have trouble, Jim. There's limitations on storing of gas. So for the gas-fired plants, there's limitations on that as well.
Yeah, but, you know, going back to Bob Murray a minute. Look, he's the focus of criticism. Why? Because Bob Murray is the last man standing in the coal industry. Not only for coal industry and all those other families, but for the millions of senior citizens and their families who depend on reliable, inexpensive, and resilient sources of electricity. And we senior citizens, we're very mindful that we pay a disproportionate share of our income for rising electricity prices. And, you know, that puts a squeeze on our family budgets for food, for medicine, for heat in the wintertime, coolants in the summer. Prices are a life and death issue for senior citizens. And, you know, again, going back to the Perry plan or the Trump plan, we're beginning to see a new direction being taken by the Trump administration. But it's got those warriors of the war on coal, our enemies. They're refocusing their old mantra that says, if you don't agree with us, then you are climate deniers. And as to quote their favorite President Obama, that means you'll be relegated to the Flat Earth Society. Well, I've got news for them. Coal is on its way back. Nuclear is on its way back. By the way, we're taking on the AARP on the nuclear energy issue up in Pennsylvania and in New Jersey and other states, because the AARP likes to get in there and talk about prices. But we clearly need lower prices. And Bob Murray has proved time and again the coal industry can provide reliable and safe sources of energy, electricity. And here's an industry that was just absolutely devastated by President Obama. It's coming back slowly but surely. It'll never get back, as Bob has pointed out, to where it was. He's lost so many coal miners. But again, Bob Murray, we thank you. You are the last man standing.
That's right.
Well, I thank you, Jim, for all that you've done. You've done a great job for America, not just our senior citizens, but for all of America, and advocating the knowledgeable, correct positions that you have. Coal-fired generation of electricity costs 4 cents a kilowatt hour. Electricity from a windmill or a solar panel costs 26 cents a kilowatt hour. And these retired citizens are paying taxes to provide a 30% production tax credit for a windmill and a solar panel, which amounts to 4 cents a kilowatt hour, subsidizing something that costs seven times more than coal-fired generation. Natural gas generation is 15 cents a kilowatt hour. And you got to remember, these gas wells, we have a glut of gas, but they only last 10 years. So you can't have a national energy policy based on 10 years. These Marcellus and Utica shale wells are all 2 or 3 years old now. They peak at 18 months, and they decline and are gone and depleted in 10 years. That cannot be our national energy policy. There has to be nuclear power and coal there. Otherwise, the lights will go out. People will freeze in the dark.
Well, it, you know, again, looking at the two areas that is of review by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, looking when the grid had the greatest stress, was one, the blackout of 2003, and the polar vortex of 2014. So this is a very common sense approach by a bipartisan, non-political board that is regulating the industry, and they're taking a look at this. And this study has been in the works for some time. The NERC study was back in 2014 that talked about the various nuances of how various aspects of the different forms of energy operated during the time of the polar vortex. And Mr. Murray, again, your argument has been you can't store wind, you can't store solar, you can't even, or you have limitations in storing of gas, natural gas, for these gas fire plants, but nuclear and coal is sustainable and is part of basically the underpinning of the baseload generation that we need for the grid's reliability. So this is about national security. It's about the security of the grid so that we don't have a major blackout and power outage at a time that we need it most. And so that's the way that Mr. Perry is looking at this thing. He said, well, look, one of the things we need to do, because, for instance, here in Ohio, the Ohio River is a major highway tributary to ship coal. Now, one of the things that the power plants were doing is they were only carrying or holding on site a minimum amount of, coal for their uses. Now, Mr. Murray's saying, oh, no, you need to have 60 days of coal on hand. Now, back to when in 2003, when the power grid went down, those nuclear plants had to come offline because they weren't feeding the grid. So when they come offline, it takes time to get them back up. So you just don't flip a switch and turn on and off a nuclear plant. When it has to basically go offline, it takes time to put it back online. So, but what is available again is those coal-fired plants, Mr. Murray. And so, you know, it is really logical that the commission would basically pass the power the Perry plan because it makes common sense.
It does. I want to explain one thing. It's 90-day coal supply.
90-day.
And secondly, the real method by which this works is they'll be allowed to have these coal-fired and nuclear-powered generators get their cost of their operation reimbursed to them with a slight profit. Right now, they're sitting here with these massive coal and nuclear plants not discharging because the private PJM interconnection or MISO grid operators are buying the cheap power and not paying for capacity. It's called capacity to have this resiliency and this security in the grid. So what they're really trying to do here, and it's the most important thing for the reliability and the security of the electric power grid and for cost of electricity in America in 60 years that I've been active, is to get this done, because it will allow these nuclear and coal-fired plant to be paid for having that capacity there to keep our electric power grid reliable. Low-cost, reliable electricity is a staple of life in America today. And Mr. Perry, as Mr. Martin said, the president is behind this, as well as Mr. Perry. And this has to get done. Unfortunately, we have some new members on the grid that have not gotten their feet on the ground, and we have two Democrats that are opposed to this, and on that FERC commission. And so we have really got to focus on this. The number one issue, in my opinion, in energy in America in 60 years.
Well, we have a new chairman on that committee, and he has asked for a 30-day delay. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about that. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
And we are happy to have with us on the phone today the chairman of the 60 Plus Association, Mr. Jim Martin, and of course also Mr. Bob Murray of Murray Energy. And Mr. Murray, going back to Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC is what it's referred to. It is a commission that oversees the industry. They have a new chairman. He has made some statements. The president has made known his intent here. You have some new members to this committee. He's asked for a 30-day delay on this because this was about to be voted on. What's the prospects of this actually getting done in 30 days, them passing the Perry plan?
Well, I think it boils down to the individual members. First, Neil Chatterjee was placed on the commission by President Trump. He's supportive of what we've been saying needs to be done for the country here. Mr. McIntyre, the new chairman, has only been on a short time. I cannot tell, but he's the one that asked for the delay, which is not good. But I cannot tell, and while he gets up to speed, what his position will be. Unfortunately, I've been scared to death about another Republican appointee named Rob Paulsen that President Trump put on. He was with the Pennsylvania Public Utilities Commission, and he's been saying all the wrong things. And he'll be the swing vote. Somebody's got to remind Mr. Paulsen who appointed him to that commission, because the president wants this done, and so does Mr. Perry. The two Democrats are throwaways. They have already announced Cheryl LaFleur and the other new Democrat. He has to have two, has to be two Democrats on the committee. They're already vote for low cost, reliable against it in America. So it's down to the individuals, with a focus on Mr. Paulsen of Pennsylvania, who it said we're not going to blow up the power grid, and a lot of that's a direct quote, and a lot of other things, thinking he's saying things before he thought them through, and he's not said things that are in the best interest of America. I hope that he votes with the president, with Mr. Perry, and with Mr. Chatterjee, and I hope Mr. McIntyre does. This is the most important issue in energy in America, as I said, in 60 years.
Well, that's right. And, you know, it's a straightforward, common sense approach to making the reliability of the grid, safeguarding us against the kind of stress that the grid faced back in 2014 with the and as Congressman Johnson has indicated, Congress is concerned about for national security purposes, for The reliability of the grid in this country. I mean, everybody depends on that. Mr. Murray, you're helping to keep the lights on in this country. God bless you for all that you're doing. You're taking care of your workers, even during the worst days of the Obama administration on his war on coal, which actually was a war on America, a war on business, a war on our future, a war on productivity of our country. It was a war on all of us when he commissioned his war on coal, and you hung in there when other coal industrial heads were taking the opportunity to file Chapter 13 and basically dispense with their pension plans for their workers. You hung in there and made sure that your workers were taken care of. Your heart is really in this. You care about the people that work for you, and God bless you, sir. You're an example for a lot of people to follow.
Thank you, Chris. You know, there were 52 bankrupt coal companies in the United States in 2016. There were only four of us that didn't go into bankruptcy. They dumped their liabilities, their debt on their creditors. They tried to dump their employee-related pension and medical benefit liabilities on me and other coal companies. They never closed a coal mine, and they've come out of bankruptcy. And now the rest of us who didn't file for bankruptcy are having to compete against them as they've dumped all their liabilities and are streamlined. And it has been a tremendously difficult task. But I have paid all of my debt obligations. I have $2.1 billion of pension and medical liabilities, and I have been paying those for other people's employees as well as my own. And I've been blessed by my Lord Jesus Christ, frankly, that I've been able to do this. I did not get this done. My Lord saw me through it.
Amen to that. Well, again, Mr. Murray, thank you for joining us today. Jim, gentlemen, we've run out of time. Boy, time goes fast talking about this very important subject. Our prayers are for you both, and Merry Christmas to you both, and we'll see you in the new year. We'll have you back on. And Mr. Murray, we're going to be praying about this and praying that good things come out of the Perry Plan. God bless you, my friend.
Thank you.
It's nice to say Merry Christmas for a change.
That's right. Merry Christmas. Enjoy the White House, Jim. I know you're heading up there this afternoon.
Yep.
God bless everyone. Merry Christmas.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.